The following podcast is a part of the Spin Studio Network.
Welcome to Flourish and Fulfilled. I'm super excited for today's guest, not only because this is a topic that I hope moves you to action, but today's guest is actually my podcast producer. So she is my right-hand wing woman when it comes to each episode that you hear every week. She's usually sitting behind the scenes and she's juggling everything and keeping it together on so many different fronts. Now, Court is a huge inspiration for me, not in the ways that you'll hear within today's podcast, but also the content that she regularly puts out there, her work ethic, and I love the fact that she always shows up, even on the bad days and the good days, but in a very honest way, always online. So, Courtney, welcome to Flourish and Fulfilled.
Thank you for having me.
As you know, I always start each guest with the episodes with fire questions so that the listeners can get to know you more. And I'm sure that by the end of this episode, they're going to get to know you on a very deeper level. And I'm going to try very hard not to cry throughout today's episode.
We'll all be trying very hard.
I posted on socials before I came in that I have you on today's episode. And so many people messaged me and was like, I cried as soon as I watched Court's first ever update. And Aww. Yeah, so it's very, very, very special. And I know that today's
episode
will be amazing.
Here, so
yeah, literally a tissue barrier up. All right, so with these fire questions, just whatever is the first thing that comes to mind so that listeners can get to know you a little bit more. Favourite food?
Probably Japanese.
Alter ego name?
I don't have an alter ego name. Do I need one?
Yeah, you do. Like Whitney.
Yeah.
Whitney. Sunrise or sunset?
Definitely sunset.
What is your favourite swear word?
Fuck.
Really?
Yeah. What did you think it was going to be?
I didn't think it was going to be fun.
Definitely.
I thought it was going to be like tame.
Oh,
like,
no, definitely not.
All right. There we go. What is your weird quirk?
I think my weird quirk would be that I listen to podcasts and watch YouTube videos all on double speed.
I know this. This is so great. Can you just explain? I know this is supposed to be fire questions, but can you please explain this? Because this is so funny.
I don't know. It was just like a few years ago, because obviously I work in the podcast space, I have to consume a lot of podcasts. Mm. And so I was like, oh, maybe I might try like listening to them a bit faster. And so then I started just like slowly going up in the speeds, and then I started doing on audiobooks. And also now I do it on YouTube videos. It's like if I have to look at anything or hear anything in normal speed, it sounds like it's on slow motion to me. Like,
so I do
can't.
It with audiobooks. Yeah. But when I heard you do it with podcasts, I was like, whoa. And it's like a marathon podcast listen now.
Yeah, it took a bit to train myself, especially with podcasts where there's multiple people.
Yeah.
And if they have accents as well, it does take a bit of time to like get used to. But now it's just like the norm for me.
So good. What is your hidden talent?
I don't really know. I guess maybe that I had like a golf scholarship when I was younger. So I'm like a golfer, I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
How cool.
I don't play that much anymore. But yeah, when I was 12, I was like the top in Australia for my age group. And yeah, I had a scholarship. So.
Well, I'm definitely not going to Top Golf with you then. What is your favorite drink? Not coffee.
No, definitely not coffee. Alcoholic, probably like a Tommy's margarita or water. Like I'm obsessed with water.
Okay.
Which is like really boring. I said margie as well.
What is your most used emoji?
I'd say probably the praise hands emoji. You know.
Oh,
the,
yeah.
The
I know that
one.
Yeah. Yeah. The worst word in the English dictionary.
Bauble.
I hate
the word bauble. I don't know why.
Christmas time.
Yeah, I love Christmas, but bauble, I hate it. Bobbin, like it's those b-b-b-b words that I'm just not a fan of.
Yes. I thought it was going to sound like moist. You know how most people like,
yeah,
moist.
Exactly.
What are the other words that people hate? Like moist, there's a couple.
Panties, like things like that like, yeah, women don't hate like those words. But yeah, the sound of bauble I just don't like.
What's the best dream that you've ever had?
I guess this is like really niche and I should be like a naked man, but it's actually like I am obsessed with like TV writing and script writing and things like that. And I had this dream that Aaron Sorkin, who's like my favorite TV show writer, who does The West Wing, came to me and asked me to be like his screenplay writing partner. And I was like, oh my God, my dream's come true.
That's good. That's a nice dream. What are you most proud of?
If we're relating it back to like obviously what we're going to be talking about today, it would definitely be that I'm turning like a shitty situation into a situation that helps other people. So it's like the worst thing of my life. I'm trying to make the best thing for other people. Like the fact that my platform, I've had over 50 people say that they've gone and had cancerous moles cut out. For me is like, you know, I potentially have saved people go through the shit show that I'm going through right now. And so I guess that's what I'm most proud of, because I think when you're in your darkest moments, some people like aren't able to speak out and share vulnerably and open. So I'm like proud of myself that I'm able to like do that, I guess.
And you've definitely shown up and done that in so many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you could have one movie title for your life, what would it be?
I was going to say a series of unfortunate events. But we'll go with this one, I guess, later on you'll ask me more specifically and it will make more sense. But we'll go with The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Okay. All right. Now that's the fire question summarised. So before we get into today's topic, I guess, I just want to kind of like summarize. Your social media is one of the only accounts. I don't follow many. I follow like 100 people because I just don't like spending time on social media. But your social media and your account is so interesting to follow because you do so many different things. And one of my favorite things about following you is your recommendations. So like movie recommendations, book recommendations, TV series, you summarize it in such a good way. Is there like a pattern or theme to your social media? Like what can people expect if they clicked on your socials?
I think for me, because I've only just sort of started showing it since 2019. Before that, I wasn't really showing much of my life on social media. It was after my like bigger cancer diagnosis that I decided to show up more and use it as a platform for good. And since then, it's just been like I felt that the best way to do it was my life. Yeah. And I watch a lot of TV. I work a lot, like I eat snacks all the time. And so it was just about showing exactly what it is that I do rather than being like, it's just about cancer or it's just about makeup or it's just about fashion. Like I was like, I'm just, my theme is my life. So it's just what I have in my life is what I show, like the people that like my family, the people that I work with. I just try and like show everything. So it's just like what you see is what you get with me basically.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun to follow along. Yeah. All right. So you have been diagnosed with melanoma 3 times.
Yeah.
And this is something that you're still going through at the moment. Can you please share your story to date for people at home that have perhaps never come across you, your journey, and bring us up to speed in regards to where we're at now?
Yeah. So I guess my first instance with melanoma was my dad growing up. My dad has had several melanomas and he's had like he's got scars all over his back. They never really advanced to be super like dangerous, but he's always been like on the brink of like, oh, you know, these could be bad, always getting them cut out. Then after that, my uncle on my mum's side passed away from melanoma. So when I was in my early 20s, that was, I guess, my first experience with melanoma. So it's always been sort of in my realm, not something that's like you've never heard of kind of thing. Then when I was 29.
So how old are you now for those listening?
I'm 35 now. Yep. When I was 29, I went and had a mole looked at on my shoulder, which I'd gone to 2 GPs before and flagged it with them and they said it looked fine. But then I had like my family and friends saying like, it looks like it's changing. It was on my shoulder, the back of my shoulder blade. So I couldn't quite see it. So people were saying it looks like it's changing. So then I went to my dad's skin specialist and he was like, oh, looks all right to me, but we'll just like shave a bit off and we'll send it away to have a look at. Anyway, that was on like a Wednesday afternoon. And he said, call the office on Monday and we'll give you the results. And I was like, okay, cool. Cut to Thursday afternoon. He's calling me. And so I straight away was like, hello. He's like, hi, it's the doctor. I'm like, okay, this isn't the receptionist. This is the fucking doctor on the phone here and they're calling me. So I knew straight away it was bad. So he was like, yep, it's level 4. So at that time, I think they might be grading things a bit different now, but at that time it was like level 1 to level 5 is how you would grade melanoma. It just indicates how deep it was into your skin. So 5 is the worst. I was a level 4. So pretty urgent. They sent me like pretty much straight away to go up to the Melanoma Institute up in Brisbane, which is like one of the best in the world because Queensland has like the most cases. And they chopped it out. They took a lymph node. They were happy with the margins. And they just said, you just need to get checked every 3 months. Skin checks, just stay on top of things. So I did that. Everything
were you getting regular skin checks before that?
No. Okay. Which obviously I should have given my dad's history and my uncle's history. So foolish. I'm also pale with red hair. So, you know, a big red flag. But you just never think it's going to happen to you. You know what I mean? And I'd had 2 GPs say that looks fine.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I naively just was like, trusted the system, I guess. And then skin check for the whole of that time. Then at the November 2019.
So how long between the first and
so
the second?
2017 to 2019. So it was about 18 months in there. I then had, I felt like a lump on the side of my arm. So I guess like underneath, what's this part here? Underneath where your bicep is, I guess, kind of area.
Yep. Yeah.
You can see how I work out. Close. I don't know what the muscles are called.
I didn't know where this corrects you then. I was like, we could say that. Podcast, they can't see.
Oh, that's fine. And I had lost a lot of weight. So I, you know, if I hadn't lost that weight, there is not a chance in hell I would have felt it. I just felt this like little lump and I thought like, oh, maybe it's like a boil forming or something. I don't really get boils, but like maybe something's happening. After like a few days, nothing was on the outside of my skin. So I was like, oh, that's unusual. But up until that point, I was still looking for moles and freckles. I wasn't looking for lumps. Nobody told me to check for lumps. I was thinking it was going to be another mole that would be bad. So I then had a skin check the week after. I was just due for my 3-monthly skin check and I just flagged it with my doctor and said, I've got a lump here. And he obviously reacted very much like, no, you need to go for a test right this minute. So I went for like all the tests I needed to, and then they sent me through to a cancer melanoma surgeon. And I went into the appointment and he said to me, I'm going to send you away for a PET scan. I need to prepare you for the fact that this is probably going to be a bad outcome and we've just got to hope that you don't light up like a Christmas tree. And that's what he said to me. I was sitting in an appointment alone going, what?
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay. That night I went to a work event. Not great. And then the next day I went for a PET scan. Then the day after that, walked into the doctor's office with my brother Sam. I'm single, so take family members with me wherever I go now, basically.
Yeah.
And before I even sat down, he said, don't sit down. And he got like a black Sharpie, circled my arm and said, you have stage 4 cancer. We're going in for surgery on Monday.
And how did you feel in that moment?
Oh, I was like, holy shit. Like I had a bad feeling. I didn't feel good about it. So yeah. It wasn't like out of nowhere, but it was like, oh my God, like what does this even mean? I don't even understand what you're saying. Like, and my only reference really was that my uncle is dead.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, from melanoma. So I was obviously like, holy shit. Oh my God. And then Sam, my brother, is, I guess, very outspoken and like action man. So he just straight away was like, what's the next plan? What do we do? What are the next steps? But the doctor was like, I need you to just like sit with this for a minute because like I've just given you some full on news. Like you're going to go into like a grieving process right now. So before I give you all the next steps, I need you to just like process it. So went home, mum and dad saw them and obviously, that was really hard. Went in for surgery. They cut it out and then they sent me to an oncologist. So this was in December. I had an appointment for an oncologist who is a person that gives cancer treatment for January. And that's when I was told that I have to start like cancer treatment. So that was that point.
And was that the whole year that you did the cancer treatment? Or that was the third?
So 2020 is when I had the treatment. So I went and saw that doctor. He said, look, we're going to put you on the treatment. So the way, just to get a little bit technical, they call it like adjuvant treatment. So basically, even though they had cut the cancer out of my arm, I didn't have any active cancer at that point. They give you this treatment called immunotherapy, which is basically chemotherapy, but for melanoma because chemo doesn't work for melanoma.
Okay.
So they have a different treatment and they said, we're going to give you this. It's an adjuvant treatment. It's just going to clean up the body. So in case there's anything else lingering, because it can just, the way that melanoma works is it's super aggressive. It can just lay dormant and then just pop up at any time. So we're just going to give you this treatment for the next year and just clean everything up. And so
how did your body respond to that treatment? So you did that for an entire year?
Yeah, every 2 weeks for a year. I was allergic to it. So my body did not respond well to it at all. We found out, I think, pretty early on the first few sessions, my reaction was getting worse and worse to the point where I stopped breathing and they were like, okay, we have to do something to counteract it. So the typical immunotherapy treatment is you go in for about 30 minutes, you get a treatment, you go home once a month. I had to get it every 2 weeks and I would be admitted to hospital for 5 hours. They would essentially knock me out, give me steroids, dose me up on drugs so that my body could handle the treatment.
So an entire year of that.
Yeah, exactly. There was that. I then finished the treatment in February this year.
Yeah.
Had like the big party, very excited. Yeah, very excited. Finished, felt like I was free again. But I just was like, you know, there's a lot of side effects of immunotherapy, and one of them is like you just feel tired deep in your soul. Like, yeah. I feel like a new mum is what probably the best way to describe
sleep
what
deprivation.
To the max. It's just like
torture.
Yeah, it's just like you just. It doesn't matter even if you are sleeping, you just feel like an empty human.
Yeah.
And that's what it was like for me. And I was like waiting for. They said the side effects can take like a month or two to come off, and I was like, oh.
I'm still feeling it.
Like, why do I feel so shitty all the time?
Yeah.
And so they went and I got a blood test, and they saw that like my iron levels were literally, they couldn't pick up the level because it was so low, non-existent. They were like, how are you walking around? And I was like, it just feels normal to me now because I went through that treatment for a year. And so then I had another PET scan, and then they found more cancer. So this time it had spread to my organs. And this was, what, 3 months ago?
Just to confirm, this is the third diagnosis.
Third diagnosis, yep. So that's this year, 3 months ago. I had the PET scan, and they said that, it's in, I think the body part, it's called the duodenum or something. It's like near the stomach and the intestines, like that area. And so pretty quickly I went in to get that removed. They also took a few lymph nodes because it had spread to the lymph nodes. So, yeah, confirmed that the stage 4 cancer had spread now, and it's obviously not ideal when it's spreading from like arms and muscles into organs.
Yep.
That recovery was like a month I was out of work. It was a long recovery. And then they just basically said that, again, because they've cut it out, that it's the other thing I should mention is that that whole year of cancer treatment didn't work. The fact that the cancer came back so quite quick meant that that whole year was pointless.
How does that feel mentally to know that you went through an entire year of fortnightly treatments and it not work?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, but it's also like there's a lot of people who don't get access to those treatments, and I guess we would never have known unless I did it. And so in one respect, I'm grateful that I was able to do it, and some people don't even get that. But also, yeah, it does feel like I wasted a year of my life doing something that was horrible and it was completely pointless. And the worst part about it is that, you know, when I had this next diagnosis 3 months ago, I spoke to the doctors and I said, like, what's the next step? And they were thinking, because I thought I get treatment again. I get a different treatment because that's what I did last time. But they said, because the adjuvant treatment didn't work, you cannot do that again. And I said, well, is there a different one, the next one up? My doctor said it would be inhumane for me to give that to you without an active cancer for us to see it reducing. So if there's nothing in my body for them to compare as I get the treatment to reduce, then not knowing if it's working again. And the chances of the next treatment working is only 30%. So they would be putting me through something that would have a lot of long-term effects, would really impact my quality of life without any comparison. So they said we cannot do it until you have active cancer so that we can see something reducing.
Can you explain what you mean by active cancer?
So I have melanoma. Mm-hmm. They cut it out. It's not in my body anymore that they know of.
Yeah.
The PET scan can only pick up things that are bigger than 4 millimeters.
Okay.
So I could have things in there. That one in my stomach was sitting there for some time. It didn't just appear.
Yeah.
It had been just too small to be detected. And then after the treatment finished, it all of a sudden was like, oh, I'm growing now. And so it was like able to be big enough to be detected. So I can have those anywhere in my body right now. I could be riddled with it, but they could be too small to find. So you just don't know. So there's nothing for them to look on a scan to say like, okay, we've got the melanoma is 10 millimeters.
Yeah.
Once she's had 6 months of treatment, it's now 1 millimeter. We can see that it's reducing. If I don't have anything to look at because they keep cutting it out, they can't tell if it's working because there's no active cancer to compare it to.
So it was just like a sitting duck waiting game.
Yeah, exactly. So, but then obviously they don't want to just leave it in there and get me treatment. So I would only kind of get the treatment if it was inoperable, essentially.
Yeah, okay.
So if they can't cut it out with surgery, then I would get the treatment so they can then try and reduce it.
Now, as we're recording today's episode, it's like actually happening as we're kind of talking through this.
Yeah.
So that's the third diagnosis.
Yeah. So I had the one cut out of my stomach 3 months ago. I have to get PET scans every 3 months for like the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will be 6 months for like the next 5 years after that. I had my PET scan, what, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. They found a hot spot in my thigh. I've literally just come right this minute. Like, I have an ice pack on my leg right now, guys, because I've just come from the biopsy. The cancer's back, they think. So
this is your fourth diagnosis melanoma.
Yeah, this time it's in my thigh.
And
not ideal.
So given that this is what we're currently talking about right now for this episode, is if you could just give one take-home message right now to the listeners at home, what would it be?
I mean, like, there's so many things I want to say about it, but I think that the biggest one is wear SPF, because not everybody can go get skin checks and they have availability to doctors. If you can, go get skin checks regularly, obviously. But the thing with melanoma is it is preventable. You can't prevent breast cancer, you know what I mean? Like, you can't prevent, like, leukemia. These things just happen to people. Melanoma, for the most part, is preventable. So it's really hard to have something that you feel like you could have done better yourself, and you've given this to yourself, essentially. So wear SPF, trust me.
You definitely opened my eyes to it, because I was entirely, not only naive, but stupidly so. Yeah. And growing up, we had solariums and we did stupid shit. Like, and it wasn't until your journey and seeing your journey that I've been like, oh, okay, like, stop being a dickhead.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also not just like the times that you're sitting by the pool or at the beach. Like, where my first melanoma one is exactly where the sun hits me, where I drive to work every single day, on my shoulder. So it's all of that when you walk to get coffee, when you're going for like a walk with your friends on the beach. It's all of those times where you're not thinking I need sunscreen, that it's still sun damage happening.
Yeah. So I know that you've literally only just found out this news like, what, an hour ago, half an hour ago. But do you know what the next steps look like for you right now? Do you know what the next process is? Do you know any of that?
Yeah. So next week I will get the results from the biopsy. So obviously there's no, you know, they're not magicians. They didn't know exactly, but based on their history, the scans, what they're looking at, based on my history as well, they're fairly confident that it was melanoma again. But I will get the biopsy results next week, which will likely come back as melanoma. So then what I think will happen is I will go back to my – at this point I should just have like a rewards card with my cancer surgeon. I'll go back to him and he will cut it out again, and every 3 months I'll just keep getting these tests, and that's just what it is. So the other thing to note is that I can't forever get these tests, because the radiation that you get from a PET scan causes another form of cancer. So they have to weigh that up. Because I'm so young, most people that do have like – this level of melanoma are usually a little bit older, and so their lifespan of getting PET scans is shorter, whereas I have to be able to get PET scans for so long, hopefully, because I'm so young, so they have to manage that balance. I can't get them because of the radiation.
Now, this is something that was really interesting as well, because as I said before, you opened up my eyes to so many different things that I was so unaware of. But when you have the PET scan, you actually can't even go in a room with someone that's pregnant. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, for 24 hours.
That's insane. Yeah, that is the insane. Radiation. I've heard you talk previously that when you were awaiting treatment, which I think was the second diagnosis, that the doctors delayed your treatment to collect your eggs.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that at the time, and now upon reflection? Like, do you think that there's a huge push for women to have children or follow a certain path, or is that pushed against you? Is that something you actually wanted?
Yeah, so it was – I had to start my treatment at the start of January. We'd just come back after holidays. It was like I'd gotten myself in this mental place, like, you know, really amping myself up. I didn't know what to expect. You know, you hear cancer treatment, it's very scary. So I really was like the night before doing this whole ritual thing and like amping myself up. I get to the doctor's office and he goes, actually, I've had a think about it. I'd prefer that you didn't get treatment today and that you go get your eggs put on ice. And I was like, what? So firstly, like, I was ready to do this today. What do you mean? Also, like, you were scared to not get it straight away because I think, is there cancer growing while I'm doing this? What the hell? But then there was the added layer of, like, at that time I was, what, 33? And I didn't know if I wanted children. I'm single. I've been single for a long time. I'm not the kind of person that's like, can I hold the baby? I'm not clucky, none of that. But I also hadn't, like, fully ruled it out. I've been single for a long time. It's hard to imagine your life as a family when you're solo for so long.
Yeah.
So I knew that it's like I could find the man of my dreams one day and be like, let's have children together. I didn't know, but I wasn't like someone who was longing for to be a mother. So when he said it to me, my reaction was like angry, like not to him, obviously, because I'm way too polite for that. But internally, I was like, just get me the life-saving treatment. Like, I don't even know if I want children. Like, how dare you as a man tell me I have to stop my treatment for something you haven't even asked me if I fucking want.
Yeah.
He didn't even ask me. It was just like, you're going to get fertility treatment. And I was like, what? Like, that's not your decision. So I was mad.
Yeah.
And then, like, he was like, look, just take a moment to think about it. And so they don't know what immunotherapy could do to my eggs. So they just said, be on the safe side. You've got to save them. So I just went home and I just remembered being like really angry to my mum. But then I just thought, like, don't be stupid. Like, give yourself options.
Upon reflection, are you glad you did? still too soon.
Look, if I'm being honest, I can't have children for 5 years until like 5 years after getting the all clear. So I sit here today where I'm still behind the eight ball in the 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm 35 years old. They were only able to get 6 eggs. At one point they thought I would have no eggs. They were like, oh, you're pretty infertile. I was like, oh, that was a big fat waste of time.
How long was the delay?
So
what of treatment between like treatment?
It was like 8 weeks, I think it was.
So quite a big delay.
Yeah. We were able to do it pretty fast though. So yeah. It was faster than most people can do it. But I think you're allowed to have 12 weeks from when you have your surgery to when you get your immuno. That's the ideal window. So we had to get it done in that time. So, you know, the doctors were amazing. They did everything as fast as they could. Luckily, I'm on the pills, so I could just stop and get my period really quickly. I didn't have to wait for a cycle, all of that stuff. But yeah, when they did it, they were like, you're really infertile. We don't know what's happening here. Like, you've got like barely anything going on. We might, at one point they said we might even have to call it off. They just dosed me with such high, like the top amount that you could get for like 3 weeks straight. People usually get for 10 days. It was really bad. And they got 6. So when I look back at it, it's like, yeah, it was probably the smart thing to do, but I probably won't be able, like realistically, I'm not using those eggs. Yeah. Like I'm not even at my 5, you know what I mean? Like it's so far away.
One thing that you've done really well, not one thing, but one of the many things that you've done very well of is sharing your story on social media, but also sharing it and breaking it down in a very easy to understand way and digestible, I guess, for everybody. Have you found social media to be intrusive? I know that like I put something up, even in regards to like the border at the moment, and people are like, no, this is the right way. I'm like, I'm pretty certain I know what is right for me right now. Have you found that it's just been so overwhelming, or how have you found documenting your journey online through social media?
I mean, it's definitely been one of the most amazing parts of this. I do feel like at times it's been like a diary for me, and I'm the kind of person that just needs to get things out and vent to anyone who will listen, essentially. Like, you know, everyone in this room here, like the producers who are sitting here right now, have heard like my life story many times. As soon as I'm upset or I'm angry, it just comes out of me, and then I can move on and process it really easily. So social media has been a lot like that, where it's like as soon as I'm feeling the emotion, I just get it out, and then I feel like so much better. So it has been like a dear diary, and that's been really rewarding. Having so many people say that they went and got a skin check, like there's hundreds of people. I've had doctors send me messages saying I had such a huge influx of young women coming into my office for skin checks that I was like, why are you here? And they're all saying your name. So I wanted to message you saying thank you. Like, I'm getting a lot of people to do this. This is amazing. As I said, over 50 people now have said that they've had like cancerous moles cut out. And so that has been so rewarding for me, because I feel in control of something that's so out of control. Like, you know, this is a horrible thing to have happen to me. I can't do anything about it at this point. I'm just waiting for more cancers to pop up every day. But the fact that I potentially feel like I could be saving other people from going through this makes me feel so much better, and that helps me mentally. But on the flip side, I open myself up to all kinds of comments, and people don't, they come from a great place, but they don't think things through always. You know, like I'll be like, oh guys, you know, next week I'll get on there and I'll say cancer's back, and I'll get heaps of messages of people being like, it's amazing what you're doing. My dad died of cancer. My dad died of melanoma. My mum, and it's like, it's really nice that you're saying that, but you're just reminding me that people die of melanoma.
And it's the emotional dumping of it, isn't it? And then you opening up every single one of those messages, and also the people giving medical advice to you when they're not your doctor.
Always.
Or even requesting medical advice from you as well.
Like, I get photos of moles. What, does this look like your mole?
I'm not laughing, but it's just like, yeah. You know that that quote that goes around with social media, and it's like, Jane selling an apple for 50 cents. And people are like, hey, Jane, what are you selling and how much does it cost? And it's literally like that thing of social media. So
it's crazy.
You are so incredibly strong, and you face so much adversity. And I know that on every single day that I've come into work, you have literally just been like an absolute rock. How do you show up every day so strong? Do you have bad days?
Definitely. I mean, I was in the car crying before I walked in here. Definitely. The minute that, you know, I got in the car and the doctors had said to me, the cancer's back, it was not a great feeling. And my best friend works for us, so I just messaged her and was like, come out to the car. You know, and obviously that's very upsetting. The minute I walked upstairs and all the staff looked at me, I was like, no one look at me. Oh God, I'm pulling it together for the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard, but it's, I think that I know how important mental health is, and so it's something I work on a lot. I will put out there that I am lucky enough that I don't struggle with any mental health issues. I've never had depression, I've never had anxiety, so I have a leg up there, thankfully. But for the last, 2020, where I was going through, all this treatment and stuff, I did a lot of work. I was reading a lot of books. I listened to a lot of podcasts. I was journaling. I was meditating. And I didn't do any of those things before, but I was like, I need to try all this shit to see what fits. Meditation didn't fit for me, but journaling really did. And I needed to figure out all the things that I could do just to be like on top of how I'm feeling. And for me at any one time, it's just like, if I'm overreacting to something, I'm like, why am I doing that? What's happening now? I'm just checking in with myself all of the time, because I can't fix my physical health at this point. That's in somebody else's hands right now. All I can control is my mental health. And so I work so hard on it. And, I have to show up. I have a business with, 25 staff that need me to be at work every day. I can't just sit at home and cry as much as I would like to. Like, I have to be here for everyone. And, it's a family business as well. I have to show up and get it done. And that's just my personality, I guess.
I think that's such a powerful thing in regards to finding what fits and works for you as well, because we often think that just because something works for someone, it has to work for us. And that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a huge point.
Yeah, a lot of people, as I said, like if you have mental health issues, being able to do what I do would be extremely difficult. So no one should compare their journey to me, and how people process things is very different. I know how I process it is venting. So I talked to Belinda in the car. I got it out. I had my cry so I can put my game face on now.
Yeah.
And that's how I'll be. I won't cry again over this until I have to call a friend or a family member and tell them, or when the doctor talks to me again.
I'll just sit here with tears in my eyes.
But I don't have those moments where I go home. I live alone. That could be a very bad mental health place. But I don't go home. And I don't sit in the shower. That just isn't what I do. Like, I just make sure that I deal with my emotions in that moment, and then I'm able to process and move past it.
So the end goal and the take home from this episode is definitely to go and get your skin checked, ideally, and wear SPF sunscreen. Yeah. With skin checks, can you talk us through, for those that are at home that perhaps have put it off because they don't know what to expect or even how to do it, how does it work end to end?
So, I mean, like, obviously I'm not a doctor. I'm just going to give you what my experience is and my opinion, but there are like three ways you can get one. You can get it at your GP, you can get one from a skin clinic, or you can get one from like a dermatologist. Dermatologist is obviously the best person to go to. They are also the most expensive person to go to. A skin clinic sits somewhere in between. Most of them you can get bulk billed as well. And then your GP typically is a bulk billing person. But the less you pay, the less
thorough.
Yes. So your GP, obviously, as I said, I've been to two and they didn't pick up on it. And they don't look at skin every single day. So a skin clinic is also just a GP. They're not anyone special in skin, but all they do is skin all day. Yeah. So I prefer to go to a skin clinic because I know that that's what they're looking at every single day, or a dermatologist. Obviously I have a lot of specialists, but that's what I was doing. The point is that you're going to someone. If all you can afford is a GP, that's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. There's also apps that are free and a mirror. Look at your moles. Look at your skin. If you don't have access to a GP, then you have a look yourself and you see if things are changing. Take a photo of a mole that looks a bit iffy. Look it up on the internet. What are the signs of moles that are like could be cancerous? Take a photo. In 3 months' time, take another photo. Do they look different? So you can do things for free yourself as well, where you can stay on top of it. So then, obviously, if you are at the skin thing, you go there, you get down to your underwear, they look at your skin, they shake your hair up because they go through your scalp. I obviously am much more naked than the average person at a skin test. I think that if you have like red flags, obviously they check more thoroughly.
Well, I'm not sure if I told you this, but one of my team members actually went and had a skin check directly from you, and she had one cut out of her hair.
Oh, wow. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's directly from my team.
I get people. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I get people say like, what if they don't check my scalp? What should I do? I'm like, ask them to check your scalp.
Speak
like,
up.
What if I have a mole that I'm suspicious of? Should I mention it? Yes, you should mention it.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things I've learned in this journey. Like, I've had the top medical people, like, we have a successful business. I am lucky enough to have access to money, private healthcare, all of that stuff to get the best people. And doctors still fuck up. They are humans. They are not superheroes. Nurses fuck up. I've been given things where it's like wrong doses, wrong frequencies, and I've had to say, hang on a second, no, that's not what I should be getting. You have to be your own like advocate. And if you think something is suspicious, go and ask a doctor. Don't wait for them to find it and then be like, well, they didn't find it, so it might not be suspicious. Ask.
melanoma stats are pretty high. Why are we not getting, like, say, pap smear? If I go to the doctor, that's like one of the first questions they'll ask me. When was the last time you had a pap smear? How come that's not a common, obviously that's, you don't know yeah, the magic well,
that's,
answer.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I always think that, you know, we get harassed for bloody, yeah. you know, these
they
tests.
They want to get inside in the, us, in but the they don't
mail,
check us.
Yeah, in the mail they're asking us, yeah. as a reminder. I get text messages reminding me about that. You know, and I wish it was like that. And I think that the fear is there for a lot of people with, like, I have to get naked. It's like, if you've had a pap smear,
if
it is
get waxing,
way
if
you, less yeah. intrusive than what a skin check is. Although with mine, I have to bend over and do a whole bunch of things because they're looking everywhere. But still, like, it can save your life. And the thing with melanoma is, like, 80% of them, if they're caught early, it's nothing. You know what I mean? And mine, like, I got it 5 years ago now, I think it was. And it has just been ongoing. Like, I can't get rid of this fucker.
Yeah.
It's like I need an AVO out on it. Like, I just cannot shake it. And it's so aggressive and there's nothing I can do about it. The treatment doesn't want to work. You know, I have to keep getting all these surgeries. I'll probably be in surgery in another 2 weeks to get it cut out of my thigh. And they'll be getting more, you know, tests after that. It's just like, it's such a little thing just going to get someone to just look over your skin.
Yeah.
And that can save you from all this drama down the track. Of course, I wish I had gone and had that mole looked at sooner because it could have saved me from all of this and who knows what is going to happen down the track. But yeah, there's a little bit of heartache. Yeah, it might cost you $80 to get it done. Yes, it might be embarrassing to stand in front of someone in your underwear, but trust me, other outcome is way worse.
Now, for those that are listening at home that do want to read or go back over your journey to date, you have everything on your Instagram and it's huge, and you've definitely done it in such a easy to digest way. What is your Instagram handle?
At Courtney Mangan, so CourtneyMangan.
And as always, thank you so much for sharing your journey. I really hope that everybody does act upon this and goes and gets a skin check. And if you do, please reach out to Court because she would love to hear that you did go and follow up on
yes,
that because that
me
is
happy.
Yeah, that is what she wants from you. Now, to end my podcast, I always recommend a book for the week. Do you have a favorite book that you absolutely love or that you recommend?
Obviously, my favorite book is Untamed by Glennon Doyle, but I feel like everybody recommends that book. So I'm going to recommend a book from, it's a new book from a girl that I went to school with actually, Bryony Benjamin, and she had Hodgkin's lymphoma and she's gone through cancer treatment and done the whole thing. And she's written this book called Life is Tough, But So Are You. And it's just like this, it's not a novel. Like, it's like this little guide of all these tips and tricks for things that if you're going through a shitty time, it doesn't have to be cancer, of things that can help, tips for like friends and family. They can help each other with things. So it's a great gift as well. And I related to so much of it, not just about the cancer, but about other things that go on in your life that are a bit shitty. And it's just like a great sort of like way and perspective to look at life if you are feeling a bit down. So I highly recommend that book.
Awesome. So my bookworm this week is actually Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey. Now, this one here has been recommended to me by so many males in my life.
It's a wild ride, that book,
yeah,
isn't it?
And I feel like with men, especially with books, is that they struggle to read a lot of different, I don't know, fiction books, I guess. So this one's a good one. A lot of men that have read this have recommended this to me. For me, it's more of a male read. I would definitely pass this on to a partner, but I think it's important to add in here. So this is the one that I read this week.
I would just say I recommend that as an audiobook because Matthew McConaughey like does
he's
it.
He's got such a sexy voice, doesn't he? I think that's why as well with Untamed, because she actually narrates that and I've listened to it ongoing because it's such a good audiobook too.
You can listen to it on double speed. It's quick.
Times two. You have to work your way up to times three. All right, guys, if you want to get involved, you can call the listeners hotline, which is 07-5649-6851, or head over to the closed Facebook group, which is Flourish and Fulfilled, or on Instagram, Flourish and Fulfilled. And if you do happen to get your skin check, please make sure that you do post into the Facebook group because producer Courts will definitely see it. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.